Welcome to Wild Hearts at Work, a podcast redefining our relationship with work through stories and conversations with wild hearts who have dared to challenge the status quo. And now, here's your host, Melissa Boggs.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Wild Hearts at Work podcast. I am your host, Melissa Boggs. In this week's episode, we are going to go a little bit outside of the corporate box, and we are going to talk about what it looks like to be a rebel in public school. And so with me today is a dear friend and one of the leading experts in agile education, the founder of agileclassrooms.com, John Miller. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. My great pleasure to be here with you, Melissa. Always fun to talk with you, and especially on a podcast.
I love saying, like, when I get to have my friends on here, like, we always have amazing conversations, and now other people get to hear them too. But this is a topic that is near and dear to your heart, also near and dear to mine. And I thought it would be really cool to be able to talk about, again, like, how corporate isn't the only place in which you can, like, bring new principles and try different things. I don't think that, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school is a place that we generally think about, you know, trying wild and crazy things in the classroom. So will you want to start just by telling us a little bit about how you started working with teachers?
Sure. I was actually many years ago, when I was younger and had more hair, I was an education technology director for a school district. And at that time, you know, we weren't doing agile or anything like that, but I became in part of my job, partly was helping the district with 21st century skills with students. And these skills are what you could imagine, you know, are like things like collaboration and creativity and problem solving and, you know, making decisions, all those things. And part of that, I was implementing some what you would call project-based learning in schools. But going through it, I was like, man, this is not this is like old school project management. Like, this is 20th century style project management that we were starting to adopt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I helped with it anyway, and it was interesting. But I realized this is just the wrong path. It's like we're taking some old ways of working, but just slapping 21st century skills label on it, just like you see in agile world, right? Doing mm-hmm. agile, that's really just waterfall. And I said, well, how do I change that? And I felt like the best way for us to change it was to model it. I was like, you know, I think we should model it. And I had to reflect on myself and the way I was running my department. So, you know, I didn't think I'm running my department as a model of 21st century skills. I was still a little bit command and control myself. We kind of did traditional project management in many ways. And that's where I really discovered Agile. We started to search and said, what would be a way we could model this? And I knew of Agile, I've worked with it a bit, but where I said, let's really bring this in. And mostly it was always culturally first. It was, hey, we want to model what a 21st century workforce or people working together actually looks like. So we brought in Agile to our department, education technology, just to run the ed tech stuff, everything from our projects to operations. So we did scrummy kind of things or Kanban, everything from service desk to implementing a student information system to setting up Wi-Fi for schools. But in that time, we would collaborate. You know, part of Agile is working very closely. So we would do things like, hey, we want to really understand your needs and do empathy mapping and did user stories, all those things. But as working with the principals and the educators there, they'd always comment after us, wow, they see us collaborating. The way we're structured was very different than the district office. So it was set up in cubicles and it was very vibrant, very visible, the work that we're doing. So the teachers and principals and would always say, hey, this is what our classroom should look like. I was like, huh, said, well, what do you mean by that? What is this, what it should look like? Like, well, just the way you interact. It's very collaborative. You're hyper-focused, like whatever it is, you're very focused on getting that done. You're involving us, you know, pretty deeply, empathy, all those things. So I got pulled into it. It was never a strategy of mine to go into the classroom. It was just a way of, again, us kind of using a fire department and helping out the district. So we got lured in, kind of like a fishing rod in, and said, okay, sure, I'd be happy to come in and share with your teachers what we're doing and see if it's a fit. I had no clue if they would throw rocks at me or say pretty neat. But a couple of principals invited me in, but at one principal at Corte Sierra Elementary School, and that's in Arizona, was a K-5 school. But I mean, talked to their teachers and they're all like, yeah, this is great. Taught them a little bit of Scrum. We end up doing like a little workshop over the summer, their own time. Like I did like a Scrum workshop for them over 2 days, like an Agile / Scrum workshop kind of thing. And after that, some of the teachers, not all of them, but some of them started to do it into their classroom. And one of them invited me, her name was Kim Mills. She was a fourth grade teacher. She invited me into the classroom. And I was dabbling with some other classrooms, but this one teacher was all in. And she was, I really want to apply this. Can you help me out? So it was a great pairing. Like she knew the teaching world. I knew Agile, at least more than she did anyway. Mm-hmm. And we just, because it was Reese's peanut butter cup, you know, we paired up and said, well, here's how we do this in, you know, an agile way. And this is what they need to learn from the curriculum side. And we just paired up together. And the first real agile classroom, I think, was in 2010 or 2011 with fourth graders. And they're like 9 years old. And by the end of the class, I mean, it looked a lot like you see in, you know, a very good, healthy, agile team, self-organizing teams. They were able to do their own work. So that's how I started. It was, you know, on the kind of the district office side, but I got pulled into it. And after that, it kind of spread throughout the school, spread throughout the district, and a lot of, you know, taking me all over the world, helping teachers to do it.
I love it. It's just, I mean, as someone who, you know, my husband was a teacher for a very, very long time. Yeah, I know that could be a very marked change for some classrooms to be that collaborative and that student-centric, you know. And I think teachers always intend to be student-centric. But if you don't have, you know, adequate structures or tools to make that possible. You mentioned a couple things, but especially for the listeners who actually might not be that familiar with Agile, can you describe, like literally if I was to walk into what we would call an Agile classroom, what would I see that is different than I might see in a quote unquote traditional classroom?
Yeah, so with an Agile classroom, you might see a couple of different things. It's kind of the magic of it. You get to customize it a bit for where your students are. But I'd say we have an Agile classroom that's been working in an agile way for a good amount of time. So they kind of got it down. This is what you would see. You would see them maybe not in their seats, just kind of moving around. They would have these very visible boards. Almost imagine like a chore chart, like a chore chart, right? But the students are figuring out what they want to learn. So they're going to get together and they're going to say, here's what we want to do this week. And the students would figure that out with the help of the teacher. But as they work every single day, they're kind of moving these sticky notes or things on the board to kind of track where they are, kind of hold each other accountable. So pretty much what you see is these little teams of kids, like 4 to 5 group individuals crowding around a certain area and figuring out what they're doing and how they're doing it and supporting each other to get it done. You'll also see them resolving their own conflicts. So we'll have little things like team agreements up for them. And you'll see if they have conflict, they don't go directly to the teacher. They'll look at their team agreement and they'll take a pause and say, okay, how do we resolve this? I think what you'll also sometimes see is the teacher not there at all. So for example, and then this is a really good litmus test of how well it's going, like kind of the goal of an Agile classroom. And the goal of an Agile classroom is to build the capacity of students to self-organize. As to where, you know, they might not be there yet, but how do you build that capacity? And what that means would be if the teacher isn't there, the classroom goes on very productively, very effectively, no drama. They're very focused. So in this case, Kim Mills, and I've heard the story a bunch of times, but with Kim, she had a substitute teacher come in one time or a couple of times. And usually you give the substitute teacher a lesson plan of some kind. Here's the thing that they need to cover. And her thing to the substitute teacher was the kids will tell you what to do.
Oh my gosh. And I love that so much.
Yeah, the sub was like, what? What do you mean the kids will tell me what to do? Just trust me. So she came in and they have these little boards they bring out that says pretty much all the stuff they were working on, where they're at in their project or in their work. And the students, okay, this is what we're doing. Today, we do this little thing called a huddle, or in Scrum, they would call it a daily Scrum or daily stand-up. And they say, here's what I did. Here's what I got done since last class. Here's what we're doing today. And here's why I need some help. And the substitute teacher's jaw just dropped of, okay. So she was just there, you know. So I think that's what an agile classroom, you know, ultimately looks like, is a classroom that organizes itself. The teacher's there as kind of a wise mentor to help out when needed. But the students themselves are driving their own learning and supporting each other in it.
What strikes me about it is that they're learning so much more than whatever that content category is, you know, whatever the subject is, you know, they're learning those skills. Now you mentioned 21st century skills. Can you share a few more of those? Like what the teachers are actually looking for when they say 21st century skills?
Yeah, they'll usually use a shorthand. There's a longer list, which I won't bore people with, but shorthand would be the four C's, if I remember this right. But communication, collaboration, creativity, and critical thinking. And in this case, critical thinking, we'd be like problem solving. And you're absolutely right, Melissa. I think that the magic of this is that whatever content that they're learning, what they call content in education, whatever that is, what you're doing is wrapping around these skills that they practice every single day. And these skills like communication, collaboration, critical thinking, and creativity, it isn't something you take a class in and you learn from a book. It's something you have to practice. So the beauty of this is just through the learning, whatever they're learning anyway, right? It isn't like you have to learn, you know, you have to totally drastically change the education system. You can use the exact same curriculum, but you pump it through kind of these structures and tools that allows them to practice those skills all the way throughout. And that's where I think it's the only way. I think 21st century skills aren't taught, they're caught. You know, you have to exercise it. You have to see others do it. You have to be able to get feedback in the middle of it. It's not something you do a multiple choice test on about collaboration.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm curious, you've worked with a bunch of different teachers at this point. I mean, you've now been doing this for 11 years. Is there a specific subject that works better? Is there a specific, I don't know, personality type of the teacher that makes this possible? Or is this like really anyone could do this?
You know, I do think there's certain areas that I find in my experience has been, wow, that was just great. You know, that was amazing. And then others I've seen where, ooh, that was hard to get going, or maybe it's not the right fit for some, you know, this classroom. I found one overall, it's always about the teacher. It's always, you got to have a teacher. For example, this one teacher, there's one point in time with Kim, and she was awesome. And she was a kindergarten teacher, became a fourth grade teacher. And she said, I want to play with their independence. That's the mindset you got to have is, oh, it isn't about getting better test scores. And they did. Their test scores didn't raise. They just stayed like they would have been anyway. But it was that mindset is like, I think it's important for students to be independent. I think it's important for students to collaborate. So I think it's the teachers who have that mindset who really, really want that. It's like anything. You got to really want it. And she was able to stick with it even when it was hard, especially her first time trying this out. There are certain things that didn't work. At one point in time, I walked in and there's a group of boys, and part of it was how we formed the teams, I think, was wrong, but this group of boys, and we had these boards that showed, you know, their work of like, here's what we're doing. And they were sitting on the floor with it. It was blank. And it was pretty much, they were sitting there on the floor, their hands, their head in their hands, doing nothing for the whole class period. And I would come in and visit and coach. And I just thought, I ruined their education. I told them, no, this is terrible. Like, this is such a bad idea. And I talked to her about it. She goes, no, I believe in them. I think they'll be able to get to it. And that's the kind of teacher you need is even though when there's rough spots with trying to learn how to be empowered, and that's someone that really believes that, yeah, even though they're here, I know they can get here. So number one, I think it's that kind of teacher with that growth mindset, whatever you might want to call it. For what works, you know, it's interesting. I find it works in any subject. I've seen it work in math and reading and English and other non-traditional things. But I do find elementary school for me has been the most successful. You would think high schoolers in some ways would, but the structure of high school makes it hard. But in elementary school, at least here in the States, is they stay in the same class all day. So you really get to learn how to work as a team. You have a teacher using the same process every single period throughout the whole day, every single day. Unlike high school where they have a bell schedule, even the middle schools, you have a bell schedule. What happens? You have one teacher for maybe three times a week. They might try it there, but then you only get a little bit of practice. Then you go back to a regular classroom and you're sitting there doing traditional ways of learning. So I find because the connection is a lot deeper in elementary school because the kids are with each other all day, but they're also with the same teacher most of the time. That gives them a chance to practice it pretty frequently. So I actually find elementary schools, kindergarten maybe too early. The youngest I've seen work well is third grade. But I would say from third grade to, fifth grade because of those conditions, I find it works faster and in some ways better than even high school or even university.
Well, and it's so incredible because at that age, they're so moldable.
Yeah.
They're curious still and they're excited to try new things. They haven't developed this, fear-based response to everything that many of us have as adults.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine even by high school, maybe you've started to develop some resistance to, change or something new.
And you've been conditioned. There's a system of being dependent on the grades and the way school works, the idea of schooling, not learning. As you comment through it, but you're right. I think the younger they are, there's less to unlearn. And I think the other awesome thing is they feel like they're doing something special. When they're doing this, they're like, wow, we're doing something special, right? Especially, and then they be able to apply it at home, where they can go home. I showed my parents how to do this, or that's the really cool thing. But I think that's a big part of it though, Melissa, like you said, is that the younger age is less to unlearn.
Well, it's funny because as you were talking and describing not just the classroom, but the type of teacher that you have to have, yeah. I mean, I could replace the word teacher with leader and almost precisely be talking about a corporate job.
Yeah.
There seems to be such a correlation despite an age difference between what we need to be learning in corporate America and what's hard to learn and what's hard to unlearn. And I know that you actually work with both. So in addition to working with, teachers, you also work as an agile coach and a trainer. Have you seen those correlations between like fourth graders and, grown people trying to work together in a company?
Yeah, I would say they're little fractals of each other, in some ways, a classroom is a fractal of the world. In some ways, I think fourth graders do it better than adults. I think, there's less ego involved. They're really in it. Like they know how to have fun. They can hold each other accountable, which is amazing with fourth graders. Like once they have a team agreement up, they'll say, hey, you said you'd do that. What happened? Like there's no shyness. And then they just, oh yeah. And they just talk about it. It's quite amazing. So in some ways I think fourth graders adult better than adults in the corporate world.
I want to say that again. Fourth graders adult better than adults.
Yeah, I think I see it anyway.
Yeah.
Given the chance and the opportunity to do something like that, it's quite amazing how much I learned from them. But yeah, I think in the end, it's all humans, trying to work together. And I think the big difference, at least with, I think adults with the, how can I say it? At least with learning, let me say with learning, like, because I do classes and things for adults mostly, is adults show up and they're usually trying to find something relevant. Like it's got to be relevant to what they're learning. So usually if an adult does a class, it's relevant to the work. I think the tough part with the students is they don't always see the relevancy of what they have to learn. So I do think there's an advantage with adults of what they do. Like, yes, this is absolutely relevant to my work or whatever. Kids, I think sometimes the hard part is how do you make learning about Roman history, relevant to their world, right? When a great teacher can learn how to connect those dots. But I do think that's a little bit tougher in elementary school.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that makes sense. It is funny though, because, you know, I've done some training myself and you definitely have, you know, the adults who come in and say like, I don't understand why this is relevant to me. Yeah. You know, they're seeking that relevance, like you said, but they're not always finding it. Yeah. And I think that could be related to what we said, you know, just a few minutes ago about unlearning. Mm. Like, you often don't know what you need to unlearn. So it may not seem relevant to you yet.
Right.
You know, I've definitely seen the light bulb come on, you know, hour six or hour 12, you know, the second day.
Sometimes even after, like, oh, at the time I didn't get it, but now I do get it.
Exactly. Like, they go back to work and they're like, oh, if I approach this differently, mm-hmm. more collaborative, like a fourth grader, I might get a different result. I'm curious about how we think these kids, like, I know it's a small number of classrooms right now, but let's dream for a moment that all of the classrooms were this way. And these kids grow up and then they hit the corporate world that exists right now. What do these kids say to us, or what do these kids do when they come with, you know, I think they come with a different set of expectations if they come out of a classroom mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. One is I'd be out of a job doing my trainings, which is around Scrum and Agile. Because they don't need it. So one is I'd have to find another job. But after that, you know, I do think, you know, it'd be very interesting where the corporate world today, for a lot of us, we're not Agile natives. We're Agile immigrants. We've had to kind of learn, you know, we've had to learn Agile, kind of, like you said, unlearn other ways, right? And that's harder. It's like learning a second language in some ways. It's always going to be you're not going to be as fluent, right, often. But let's say this happens. You have this generation Agile and a wave hits corporate America. Well, you have these native Agilists that are right out of, and I think you're right, they're going to have these expectations of like, you know what, supervise me. Give me a problem. Give me a problem and a team to solve, right? So I think it would force some of the, you know, you hear a lot of books and stories about trying to transform corporate America. I do think it's going to be such a tidal wave if that did happen, that it would force change. Managers, they wouldn't tolerate managers who can't empower them. You know, they will leave and go somewhere else right away, or very quickly they'll make those managers obsolete if they kept leading that way. So my guess would be it would totally change the ecosystem, the ecology of corporate America for the better. It would be the kind of transformation that we seem to be looking for in corporate America, about empowering people, about collaboration across silos, about being customer centric. I think there'll be such second nature to them that they can't tolerate bureaucracies that would block that.
I agree. And I'd like to think that I talk about this in almost every podcast. So those of you who have been listening to all of them, just bear with me. But I feel like the pandemic accelerated some of that anyway, mm-hmm. at least the desire for it. So, you know, you hear a lot about people better understanding their worth, recognizing that if they are not working at a place that has the employee experience that they're looking for, that they could just go be a freelancer. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think the pandemic has accelerated that. However, I think what might be lacking is we don't know how to do it though. You mm-hmm. know, there's a difference between wanting that and actually having the skills or the knowledge mm-hmm. to make it happen. You know, I think there are a lot of leaders who want that. There were probably a lot of teachers who mm-hmm. wanted it. But until you or others like you came to the door and said, hey, here's a framework, like here's a way to approach it, you know, something practical, then they find themselves kind of stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. They would actually have the capabilities coming in. Not only that, but I think they'd have the confidence, you know, and that's something we saw. Was Rosita Darden. She's a teacher in Florida. And we started, did some things for, is it Grandview Prep in Florida. And we helped them do Agile. And I can't remember which grade she started with. I think it was like fourth. But I didn't talk to her for a couple of years. And I ended up saying, hey, somehow reconnected. And sometimes you just think, oh, it was a one-time thing. They tried it for 1 year. But it's just, no, we did it. And then we did it in fifth grade and sixth grade. And it was amazing. 3 years of that where they were just, I pretty much just show up and they run the class. And I think the same thing with corporate America. I mean, they're going to show up and they're not going to need to be, you know, someone to hold their hands, you know, someone to tell them every, you know, someone give them directions of step-by-step of tasks. You know, that is that amount of cognitive load that's freed by leaders is my thinking is the leaders won't have to do that anymore. So that's another kind of this other ripple that would have is now the leaders can actually lead. They can think about strategy. They can think about the ecosystem of the company and all the things that you would, most of the times when I talk to leaders, those are things they wish they could do more of. And by having that, I think it elevates everyone. It doesn't just make those old managers obsolete, but it actually elevates them to do the bigger cultural work and strategic work that they really want to do.
Absolutely. And then imagine, I mean, we're going really crazy with our dreaming here, but imagine the innovation that comes out of that. Yeah. When, you know, folks are working on teams, they don't require handholding, and, you know, the leaders, the strategy thinkers are dreaming up these, you know, huge inventions, essentially, because they can. That sounds incredible. I'm such a big believer in this movement for that reason, like specifically the Agile Classroom movement, because one, they're at a stage that they don't have to unlearn things, like we've already talked about. Mm-hmm. Two, I think that the ecosystem of the world, because of the pandemic, is hungry for it, but doesn't know how. And so if you can meet these young ones coming up, you know, with a world that is sort of prepared for it, but like not practically speaking, you know, they need someone to come up with the tools.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a different world in, I don't know, 20 years or so.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I think it, not even a corporate world, but things like climate change. I mean, we're failing our generation at solving those problems. And, you know, I look, not to pass the buck to the next generation, we all have to help solve those kind of big problems. But imagine that. Imagine a group of, you know, a whole generation of problem solvers that have not only they can do it, but they have the confidence to do it, that they have the self-efficacy and the agency to know I can solve problems and I can get through many iterations and I know I can fail, but keep trying at it. Imagine, you know, not only the corporate world, but just the world in general. And I feel like that would give me hope if that was the case.
It gives me hope just talking about it, because also they would have the feeling of accountability, and you don't have to force accountability on them, right? Like I go into organizations and they're like, we have to work on accountability. And what they mean is we have to force people to do what we want them to do.
Right.
But I think if you're a fourth grader who looked at a working agreement and said, hey, you said, you know, we said that we were going to behave this way, or you said you were going to do that task, and they can say it with such innocence, right? Yeah. If they are reinforced in that in a positive way for years to come, then accountability then becomes, you know, I'm accountable to you as a person, mm-hmm. not I'm accountable to this task and I'm going to get in trouble if I don't do it.
Yeah. And the way I define accountability would be you're holding things to account. It's just, here's just what I said I would do. Here's what I did. It's like accounting. That's all it is. It isn't making anyone wrong or bad, but it's just reflecting back. And I think the other part of the collaboration piece I've seen with an Agile classroom is the bonds they make. So it isn't just the work, but it's the bonds they make in that team, because those teams stick together. Unlike traditional, there's cooperative learning that happens in schools, but they usually mix them up, though, because they find that's a good thing. It's engaging. There's positives to it. But we try to keep them as much as possible in a real team that sticks together for a while. And when that happens, you build trust and you have these deep bonds. And when you have a lot of trust, you can hold accountability without fear of you might hurt someone's feelings. It's just, no, that's just what trust is. Trust is interlinked with that accountability.
Absolutely. And I think we all can struggle with that, you know? And so again, I just keep thinking about like, they're coming up with these expectations,
yeah,
you know, great expectations. Okay, I didn't mean to quote a book title, but you know, these wonderful expectations of what the world should look like, because that's what the world has looked like. They've seen the possibility of it. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, they've seen it work.
Yeah.
So besides the three boys that were sitting on the floor that one time, are there other times that you've seen it, if not fail, like not turn out the way that you expected, or?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one not expected was the group of boys. I was like, man, they're, and part of the way they were formed, I was like, we didn't form the teams right, but they were kind of friends, but they were also, you know, they had some learning disabilities in that group, and it was all, they were all together, but you would think that was doomed. It wasn't. The teacher kept them together. By the end of the year, they were one of the best teams out there. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, they would just go up and they're like, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do, they were building, I remember coming into the classroom and they were doing a science study book because they have a science test they take at the end of the year for the state. And they were making a science study book for the rest of the class, was their project. And they had two computers and they had their sticky notes. Oh, natural disasters. I still remember this, natural disasters. And they had sticky notes of the tasks they would do that they came up themselves. Oh, I'll get a picture of a volcano. Oh, I'll get a text. Let me get a book with natural disasters and we'll put in the content. Oh, let me find, I'll put that into a Google Doc. And each one had their task, but they were doing it concurrently. It was just all buzzing around, no project manager. They just did it themselves. So the end of the year, that group of boys that was just doing nothing was probably one of the most, self-organizing teams in that classroom, which was amazing to see, And one group, that one boy in there, but a hearing disability, so also speech impediment that came from it, was very nervous to talk. He wouldn't speak because of that. But his team supported him so much. The end goes, no, you present this. We always this thing called a review at the end of a cycle. And he goes, no, you do it this time. I'm like, no, we got you. We're going to be here for you. And he did it. The teacher cried, and so.
Aww.
That's unexpected. I didn't expect that. You know, maybe the teacher did, but she's awesome. I was also at, I'm not going to say the school district, but one school district, and it was, some schools have this area. It's almost like a mini school of the kids who don't behave well. Right. It was this school, like, well, this is all the kids who aren't behaving well, but we think this could help them. And I went in, tried it, but it just wouldn't work there. Like, it was just, there were so much misbehavior that someone who was trying to collaborate with someone else, it just didn't work at the time. And maybe it would have, but I felt like there's got to be some level of desire from the students. There's got to be some level of motivation that they want to try it. And I think by being in that school and that label, as soon as I got there, actually two kids left, like they just walked out. They just totally walked out. So, you know, you gotta be in the building, right, in a way for it to work. So it will work everywhere. No. And I told them, so, you know, I just don't think it's going to work here. I think some of the visual stuff is going to help you and it's going to help keep some focus. I gave them some other techniques like a Pomodoro technique that really helped, but I felt like collaboration, the things we want in a self-organizing team, collaboration. I felt like for them, it was better for them to just work by themselves than to collaborate, just because they couldn't get everyone, you know, really motivated and it would be too disruptive. So yeah. There's times where, yeah, it won't work.
It also strikes me though, there's a lot of complexity in that environment. Like yeah. Everyone's got their own set of, you know, whatever's going on at home, whatever's going on in their head, whatever's going on, you know, in that moment. And, you know, maybe you just can't prioritize collaboration when, you know, the environment is that complex.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is okay in agile classrooms anyway. We have two spectrums. One of those is a collaboration spectrum, which says, hey, you can start just working by yourself, but you build the capacity over time to learn to collaborate. But at the time, I guess really the thing was collaboration isn't the right, like keep you at the lowest level of collaboration, right, for this to be effective.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious, I know you to be a very self-reflective person. What would you say are the top, like maybe two things that these kids have taught you about yourself over time?
Hmm. Let me reflect on that. Taught me about myself. I can tell you what they taught me anyway. I'm not here about myself. That's an interesting question. But Devin, what they taught me is how simple things can be.
Mm.
You know, I like to be up to breast on, you know, up to date on, you know, the newer techniques and models and things like that. And so just talking to a kid, they just make it really simple. For example, with one group of girls, their name was Team Bubblegum. What was their name? And had a team agreement, had a thing about conflict. How do we resolve conflict? Because you're going to have it as a team. And how do you resolve it? Let's figure that out before you get into it. And they had a simple thing of talk it out. I'm thinking, nah, you need something, you know, more, you know, a little bit more than just talk it out, you know, some conflict protocols or whatever. And I saw the group of girls who worked amazingly together almost every single time. But this one time I visited the classroom, the two girls, something happened. One girl started to cry and they pointed to their team agreement and then they walked outside. Then 7 minutes later, came back in and started to work. So at the end, I said, just curious, what happened? I saw you cry. I saw you walk out. Saw you come back in. And she goes, oh, well, can't remember exactly what happened, but that hurt my feelings. I got upset. Then we looked at our team agreement and said, we should talk it out. So I asked, well, what did you do? They looked at me like I was dumb. So well, we talked it out. No, so, you know, it's just things like that, like how simple things can be, right? Just like, you know, holding accountability with students. There's one group of high schoolers where this one girl was doing nothing. She just didn't. And I saw it. And they had what we call a retrospective at the end where they reflect on their learning and how they work together. And someone said, you know, they kind of went around and said what they did well and kind of helped, you know, rated each other in a way, in a positive way. And the one boy said, and you, pointed to the girl, and you didn't do anything.
What?
She goes, and you didn't do anything. And I was like, whoa, like the thought world, yikes. And you didn't do anything. But you know what? We need a facilitator. I think you'd be pretty good facilitation. What do you think about our next cycle? You, she was like, yeah. She stepped in, started to facilitate and found her space. So just little things like that is what I learned is that, you know, just keep it simple and keep it clear. And I've always learned that from the students.
Yeah. And also, keep it simple, keep it clear, and there's a place for everyone. I mean, I'm struck by that young man's ability to see that she wasn't like a terrible person or even lazy, that maybe she just wasn't in the right spot.
Yeah, it was a pure observation. You didn't do anything. It wasn't like you're right. It wasn't like you were bad or you were a slacker. Didn't put all this judgment. It was just very simple, very matter of fact. You didn't do anything. Maybe there's something you could do, though, in the next one. So, yeah.
Amazing. I love that so much. You know, my daughter is a sophomore, and I have a seventh grade son. And, you know, I haven't seen a lot of this around. We still have some work to do in spreading the good news, if you will. But what I see in them is a lot of the things that we're describing. Like, I think this generation is naturally, you know, a lot of those things. This generation behind us is, they're simple and clear. They're not simple. They keep things simple and clear, but they're also very independent thinkers and they are more informed than any of us ever were at this age.
They can call bullshit on us pretty fast, I think.
Yes, exactly.
And so, the internet, YouTube.
Yeah. So here's what I think. Here's the flip side of this. If we don't teach them these skills, then it could backfire on us pretty badly. If you don't harness that, you know, it can either be magic or it can be, you know, not great.
Yeah. Learning to self-regulate and to use that, those powers responsibly. It's pretty important.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we're starting to get toward the end a little bit, but is there anything I didn't ask you about when it comes to Agile classrooms that you would want people to know about and maybe think about people who have kids or teachers who might be listening? Is there anything you want them to know?
Yeah, I guess if someone was asking about where to start, you know, you don't know how to do the, you know, just from the podcast, you wouldn't know all the details of it. But I find any kind of change in schools is risky business for a teacher. There's a lot of eyes on teachers, everything from the kids themselves. They don't want to fail the kids, parents, administrators, the district. I mean, it's a risky, unlike some of us where you can try something and, you know, fail, not, you know, has some impact. Here is like, there's constant, they're always in kind of on this tightrope is the way I imagine it. Mm-hmm. And a misstep, right? There's someone's going to be calling them out. So one is just empathy for teachers of where they are. They don't want to fail the students because of the amount of, you know, amount of people they might let down from it. So I find some teachers are just willing to take this and just start with it and run with it in their classroom. And others aren't, but they need some confidence like any of us would be. Like, hey, I want to learn how to do this first. I want to have a sense of competency with it. So some the best ways of starting for like as even as a parent might be to start like with the club or an after school activity and start it there. That's a safe place to get it going. It's also a place where teachers will see it work. And usually when they see it work, you can talk about it all you want, but when they see it, they're like, wow, that's amazing. And they'll see their students do things they didn't think they could do on their own. And then they'll think, maybe I could bring this into my classroom. Maybe we can try a project with that. So I find starting on the outside, if you're volunteering as a parent even like a newspaper club or, you know, they have, school newspapers, those kind of things are usually safe places to kind of experiment with these kinds of things.
Are there, so we already mentioned agileclassrooms.com, and I will certainly link that in the show notes. Are there other resources out there that people should be looking for?
Sure. There's a guide that we have that's free, Creative Commons, called the Agile Educator Guide, and you can get that from agileeducatorguide.org. It's like a 10-page document, but it tells you the basics of the framework.
Awesome. And then I know your website has a ton of resources in terms of templates and like printouts and things that people can use as well. Are you also taking clients right now? If there are people who are interested in learning from you as, you know, teachers and whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. I hold workshops on Agile Classrooms that will teach you and how to apply the stuff, how to adapt it to your classroom. So, but visit agileclassrooms.com and we'll all be there.
Nice. In addition to that, is there any other way that people can reach you?
Twitter. I tweet a lot. So at Agile Schools is my Twitter handle. Probably be the easiest way. And you can always email me at john@agileclassrooms.com.
Awesome. Well, John.
And my home address, if you want to visit me, I'm kidding.
That would be brave. That would be very brave. Well, thank you a million times over for just sharing your story. And I, like I said, am so passionate about this topic because I think it's incredibly opportune right now. I think the world is sort of ripe for this type of transformation of the ecosystem, as you put it. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Yeah. And thank you for the work you do.
Thanks, Melissa. And thanks to your listeners.
Amazing. All right. So listeners, thank you for joining us again this week for this episode of Wild Hearts at Work. As always, subscribe, like, share with your friends, share on social media. And we do now have a Patreon if you're interested in supporting the show. You can just go to patreon.com/wildheartsatwork. So as always, we appreciate you. We appreciate your listenership. And until next time, dear hearts, stay wild.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Wild Hearts at Work. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share. For more resources and to connect with Melissa, visit melissaboggs.com. Also, if you or someone you know is doing great work in a wild way, get in touch about being a guest on the show. Until next time.